climate change the facts? The $1 trillion guess and the zombie theory by Joe Nova. Part 1. Joe Nova is a science writer with columns published in The Spectator and The Australian, and author of The Skeptic's Handbook, published in 2009. Scientifically, the theory of a carbon disaster started knocking on death's door 10 years ago. It quietly went terminal, but hardly anyone knew. Over the last decade, 28 million weather balloons, 30 years of satellite recordings, and 3,000 robotic ocean buoys confirmed that if the carbon disaster wasn't dead, it was on the critical list. Not critically important, but critically wounded. Few realized that a $1 trillion industry was based entirely on a guess made in 1896 about relative humidity, and that the guess appears to be wrong. The first climate advisory committee, namely the compilers of the Charney Report, convened by the National Academy of Sciences as a kind of baby IPCC, repeated the assumption in 1979. And over the next four decades, Western governments would commit to a grand project to try to change the weather. At one point, global carbon markets reached a turnover of $176 billion in U.S. dollars a year. The Bank of America pledged $50 billion to combat climate change. How green is your banker? Renewables investment reached $359 billion annually. Such was the cult-like fear. The EU unconvincingly boasted that they had agreed to commit at least 20% of EU spending in the period 2014 to 2020 to, quote, climate action objectives. What was scary was that nobody laughed. Most of this money depended on an assumption made about relative humidity in the upper troposphere. Like AAA-rated mortgages, the real uncertainty was written in fine print, while the theory was advertised as, quote, simple physics. The guess that created the $1 trillion crisis. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Water vapor, aka humidity, is a more powerful greenhouse gas than CO2. Warmer air can hold more water vapor. What if CO2 warmed the world, which caused humidity to rise and amplified the warming? Catastrophe. But water molecules are the stirring split personality molecules of chemistry. Humidity has options. In an instant, it can be cloud, rain, ice, or snow, and all of these have different impacts on the climate. Humidity warms the earth, but most clouds cool it. The extra warming caused by CO2 could be amplified or undone by what the fickle water molecules do. Water is the real dynamo controlling the climate. While CO2 is steadily increasing year on year, levels of water in the atmosphere change by the hour. A CO2 molecule might float for years, but each water molecule stays aloft for only 10 days or so. And once it has become part of a cloud, it condenses out in less than a day. The amplification is called positive feedback. And this particular feedback from water molecules is one of the biggest single factors in climate models. There are claims that it doubles the effect of all other forms of warming. Here's the line from the 1979 Charney Report. A plausible assumption, borne out quantitatively by model studies, is that relative humidity remains unchanged. The increase in absolute humidity provides a positive feedback. That's it. The foundation for multinational global action comes from a, quote, plausible assumption. Hey, but it was backed by 1970s computer models. They go on to say those same models assume fixed relative humidity. What's plausible is that if you use models that assume relative humidity stays the same, these models will confirm that relative humidity will stay the same. Today, not much has changed. The modelers assume that CO2 has caused most of the warming since the Industrial Revolution, and for the most part, they also assume relative humidity stays the same. The models then show that CO2 caused most of the warming, and thus the assumption about humidity was right. If some other factor caused some of that warming, both points would be wrong. The hot spot that wasn't. The humidity that supposedly amplifies the warming is not just any old human patch anywhere, but the thin layer near the top of the troposphere about 10 to 12 kilometers above the tropics. This is where the action is. Models predict faster warming there, and the trends show up as a red hotspot on graphs, but it's hard to measure. It's not like scientists can poke gauges up there on long sticks from the office. The best data we have comes from weather balloons, which rise up through the layer and radio the information back before they explode. We've released 28 million or so of these since the late 1950s, and the trend up there is unmistakably not what the models expected. Instead of getting more humid as the air warmed, it got less. Temperatures also didn't warm as much as they were supposed to. The result was stark in the color maps of the atmosphere. Yellow is not red. Where was that positive feedback? Other data kept coming in, too. Temperature recordings from all four major global databases unexpectedly flatlined together, which wasn't a problem itself, except that it showed that the models don't understand the climate. Around the world, 6,000 boreholes were drilled in ocean mud and rocks, stalagmites, corals, and clamshells, were used to estimate the last 2,000 years of temperature. The message was clear. There were global ups and downs that have nothing to do with CO2. Some mystery factor is moving temperatures on Earth, and the models don't know what it is, and it's more important than CO2. Perhaps that mystery factor is working now, perhaps it isn't. The models can't tell us. In response, the scientific financial green complex swung into action. Postmodern data as scientific papers appeared. Everyone from UN committees to investment bankers churned out glossy reports, which everyone cited but almost no one actually read. Vice presidents did full fear documentaries, and black belt graphs evolved to protect the dead. Fans cheered, and blind journalists applauded. Let no man ask a difficult question. It's really been a spectacular public relations effort. Can I sell you a used theory? There's a shell game going on with evidence. Almost all of the pinups of climate change are irrelevant because there's no cause and effect link. It's true the world is warming, sea levels are rising, glaciers are melting, and small fish are getting reckless. But the effects of all the causes of warming are largely the same. Whether it is the sun, cosmic rays, or a Klingon plot, seas would rise, glaciers would melt, and heat waves roll on. The real problem, then, the 2 trillion question, is how to tell what did it, and by how much. It's a multivariable nightmare. All factors are changing simultaneously, and there are no controls and no reruns. Strip back the advertised, quote, signs of warming, and the sacred vault of 95% certainty contains almost nothing pointing the finger at CO2. The climate simulations are, quote, it. All the talk of it being simple physics is, and always was, a complete red flag. 2/3 of the forecast of doom comes from complex, debatable feedbacks, not the simple physics of CO2. The models are consistent. They're bad at everything. With a bad assumption at the core, it's no wonder the models don't work. 98% of the models predicted that there were no circumstances where global surface temperatures would pause for as long as 15 years. The pause has now been somewhere around 17 years long, or 20 depending on who is counting. As the Hockey Stick blog says, if you can't explain the pause, you can't explain the cause. Thus and verily the excuses for the pause have flowed. Humans were once forecast to slow the winds, but then faster winds arrived instead, and so now perchance they could have caused the pause. Likewise, volcanoes could have cooled the earth lately with aerosol particulates, although peak volcanic aerosols were higher in the 1980s and 1990s. A new force called natural variability has been invoked too, but no one can quite explain why nature only cools the world and never causes the warming. Likewise, it's also possible that the missing heat could have gone to the deep ocean. But what if it didn't? Awkwardly, since 2004, the oceans are rising slower than previously, despite all that CO2. One study claimed the ocean has warmed by 246 trillion joules since 1955, which sounds a lot more exciting than it is. It translates to just 0.09 degrees Celsius in 50 years. And it's a rather brave and ambitious claim that we can measure the ocean temperatures to 1/100th of a degree even today, let alone in 1960. As far as measurements go, we left the dark ages of ocean heat with the 2003 Argo program, a global array of more than 3,000 free-drifting profiling floats that measure the temperature and salinity of the upper 2,000 meters of the ocean. Now there is almost one thermometer for each 200,000 cubic kilometers of ocean. Is this what 95% certainty looks like? As it is, the Argo data that has come in is like the thermometers on the surface, like sea level measures and like radio sondes in the upper atmosphere. It doesn't show as much heat as the models predicted. Instead of saying the pause fits with missing energy, which fits with missing sea level rises, the excuses pile on excuses. What happened to the missing sea level rise? Apparently, the ENSO effect dumped it on Australia. So sea levels need adjustments too. When the data doesn't fit, we don't adjust the model, but we do adjust the data. What bad luck! All the major instruments are cold biased. What are the odds? In any case, excuses for the pause don't solve the other flaws. The models not only fail on global scales, but on regional, local, short-term, polar, and upper tropospheric scales too. They fail on humidity, rainfall, drought, and they fail on clouds. The common theme is that models don't handle water well. A damn shame on a planet covered in water. These doctors of dead science were surely given wings by a religious faith in their own insight. Only the true believers could believe thousands of instruments are biased against them, and in the same direction, and know that their 95% certainty hides in the deep abyss. The science, quote, may be settled, indeed, but it settled somewhere in the Mariana Trench. 95% certainty means discrepancies, surprises, and inconsistencies. These same people below endorse the 95% certainty. Here are their words on the differences between modeled and observed trends on the most influential feedback system in the climate models. Surprisingly, direct temperature observations from radio sonde and satellite data have often not shown this expected trend. The tropical troposphere had actually cooled slightly over the last 20 to 30 years, in sharp contrast to the computer model predictions. Most models overestimate the warming trend in the tropical troposphere. The cause of this bias remains elusive. Shh, don't mention the water. To state the bleeding obvious, Earth is a water planet. Water dominates everything, and it's infernally complicated. Water holds 90% of all the energy on the surface, and both NASA and the IPCC admit water vapor is the most important greenhouse gas there is. They just don't seem inclined to produce posters telling us this is a humidity crisis or that water is pollution. The untold horror of humidity. Floating invisible water molecules are up to 100 times more abundant than CO2, literally 40,000 parts per million versus 400 parts per million. And water vapor absorbs and emits across wider bands of the infrared spectrum as well. Not to mention that there are even pools of liquid H2O known to exist on the Earth's surface, like one called the Pacific. Meanwhile, about 13,000 cubic kilometers of liquid and solid water is suspended in giant fluffy clumps that cover 60% of the Earth. Each different incarnation of water has a different effect on the climate. Down on the surface, liquid water is dark and absorbs almost all the energy arriving. Solid water acts in exactly the opposite way. Ice is like a mirror bouncing the energy back to space. Up in the air, thick white low clouds cool the planet by shading it, while thin high ice clouds have a net warming effect. There is no end to the contradictions, and you don't need to be a scientist to know that cloudy humid nights are warmer, while cloudy damp days are cooler. Dry air means temperatures swing more from hot to cold, while humid air keeps temperatures stable. The effects are so large, none of us need a thermometer to know this. When data science becomes surreal science, the hot spot lives on. Even by 1990, the first searches for the hot spot were hinting that it wasn't happening. For the next 20 years, scientists reanalyzed the weather balloons in dozens of papers to correct for every possible cooling bias they could find. With that path exhausted, things got more creative. In paper after paper, the hotspot kept being found, albeit in odd conditional ways. Absent from the paper flow was a single paper from those same scientists that headlined that it had gone missing. Pretty much the only time anyone admitted it was lost was in the introduction to a paper where they thought they had found it. Confirmation bias, anyone? Climate Change the Facts is published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved.